What's up, guys? Welcome back to Strength 101. Where am I? Send help. We don't know where we are.
Send help? SOS.
SOS. We're going to test out a new setup today. So we are actually in the Strength Academy studio. It's only 900 square feet in here. Very homey.
Like Jimmy Jim.
But you guys should let us know in the comments whether you like this setup better, whether it looks better. We're kind of feeling it out. We're still unsure. There was a very homey vibe about being in my home for it. But yeah, today is part two of us going over different muscle groups and how you grow them, what the best tips are for getting growth in individual muscle groups. We did the upper body last time. If you didn't see that, go check that out first. But today we're gonna hit all lower body. So we're gonna hit glutes, we're gonna hit quads, we're gonna hit hams and calves. But Teresa, you're here too.
I am here. You? What's up, guys? I am fantastic. I love lower body stuff. So I'm excited to talk about it.
Awesome. Let's jump right in.
All right.
Might as well. Okay, we're going to start out with the glutes. I think there's a lot of people out there that want bigger glutes. Teresa, what advice do you have for them?
Well, that is the new thing. Don't be afraid to train glutes, right? I would say, so like even on all of these lower body exercises, one thing I've learned, especially of as a coach and just continuing to, you know, widen my training for myself would be that your lower body is a lot stronger than you think. So don't be afraid to push it harder than you think as well. Because if you want that to grow, you need to push it harder. And you're stronger in your lower body usually than your upper body.
Definitely. What is it you just said right there that really triggered me? It was you're stronger than you think you are, right?
Yes.
I'm a big advocate that, especially with glutes, that people don't train them for power enough. Now, Of course, we're going to hit some heavy squats and deadlifts and all those big, strong exercises when we want to grow glutes. But when I think about the people with the most developed glutes, this is always how I think about this. What comes to mind for you? Let's just kind of reel on this and see
for
what
exercises?
We can come up with. No, just like athletes that have really well developed sprinters, right? That's definitely what I always think about, especially
football players, baseball players.
Yep. Yeah. What kind of football players though? Because not all of them. Not all of them.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Butts.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know the position
Teresa's
super well.
Football butts all day.
But I was thinking of exactly who we were just talking about before. It was like DK Metcalf. Shout out DK. he just got on the Steelers.
Yeah. And what's defining about DK Metcalf?
What does he do?
What is he known for? Besides football, what in football?
I don't know.
Being stupid fast, right?
Oh,
isn't
is he really
he
fast?
Insanely fast?
He's a big boy, I think, for
he's
how fast
boy.
He is.
He's insanely fast, right? Isn't he the guy who ran the 100 meter at the?
Yes.
See, he ran at the Olympic trials, didn't he?
DK Metcalf?
Am I crazy about this, Stetler?
No, you're not.
Okay, so this is true. Man, can you tell that both of us don't pay attention to football enough? So yes, DK Metcalf ran, I believe, in the Olympic trials this last like go around for the Olympics in the 100. Now, he didn't finish super well because he's a football guy, not a track guy. But yeah, he's insanely fast. And so the whole purpose of this conversation, though, is that, yes, I think about sprinters when I think about large glutes. And then personally, I always think about gymnasts have extremely well-developed glutes.
Ah, yeah.
And I think those two athletes have different development to their glutes. Mm-hmm. But when we think about sprinters, I think they're really strong and really fast in extension-based movement, meaning that they're driving the leg behind them. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you want really well-developed glutes, there's also a range of motion issue that you have to deal with. I think some of us, obviously a lot of us don't go sprinting, but you should still develop glutes in that kind of extension-based thing, which is why we love lunges and why we love split squats and everything. And then with gymnasts, I just think, man, they are so mobile in their hips that they have gotten full glute development. Mm-hmm. And so if you have really stiff hips, that's probably something that's going to limit your glute development.
Sure.
But right when you think, I want to grow bigger glutes, has that ever been a goal for you?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Me too. I have had very small glutes most of my life, and I just want them to be bigger.
Yeah.
You know, keep up those genes. What mm-hmm. exercises are you going with?
I thought of right away just hip thrusts.
Hip
and
thrusts.
And deadlifts, of course. Those are the two that came to my mind instantly.
Yeah, I think the big three kind of overload that a lot of people think of where they can go the heaviest, because we do have to get an overload exercise on any muscle group, is definitely your squats, your deadlifts, and your hip thrusts. Mm-hmm. I still think the hip thrust isn't as popular as squats and deadlifts for most people. And maybe it's because it looks weird, or maybe it's strange to set it up in a regular gym. If you don't know what we're talking about, you should just go look up hip thrust real quick. Also glute bridges, but those aren't as common. But with a barbell, I think the hip thrust is an amazing exercise because when we've trained it in the gym with our members, I found that when I did hip thrusts, I actually finally felt like I was getting glute work mm-hmm. done. Mm-hmm. that I didn't necessarily feel on my squats and my deadlifts, because I think if you have really strong hamstrings, sometimes you can take over with those strong hamstrings in those movements. So if you're somebody who does a lot of deadlifts, does a lot of squats, but you never really feel like you're activating or growing your glutes, you should definitely try the hip thrust. It's also one of the only exercises where it's heaviest at the top, contracted in a shortened position. And I think we train a lot of muscles like that naturally, but we don't think of the glutes like that. If I were to do a bicep curl, I feel it the most in the top position. That's when I feel that really hard squeeze. And maybe I don't feel as much stretch. But with deadlifts and squats, lunges, RDLs, all the variations that we have for glute training, almost all that is stretch work. And so if you only have one exercise that's really good at strengthening you in a shortened position and the rest of them are lengthened, you should probably spend some time there. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you have never tried hip thrust before, give it a shot. Also, on hip thrust, like, do you remember what weights you hip thrusted last time we were doing this in class? Just generally?
Maybe like 250? 250? Right? I don't know. I think that's something like that.
I think that's, it's not uncommon for women to be able to hip thrust anywhere between that 200, 300 pounds. Some of the really big, strong people even get up above that. Guys, same thing. I think 300 to 400 pounds, not super uncommon if you're an experienced lifter. You can go about as heavy on a hip thrust as you can on a deadlift or a squat. And it's extremely taxing. You hit a heavy set of 10 on hip thrusts, you felt like you just did a heavy set of 10 on deadlifts.
I will even say on hip thrust that a lot of gyms, I've noticed, at least on like social media or even some of my friends, the gyms that they go to, they're starting to implement hip thrust machines, which looks amazing, because then you don't have to set up the barbell or anything. Like, you literally just put the weights on the side and strap in, and that looks awesome. Like, that makes them honestly probably a little bit, I don't want to say easier, but easier to set up and probably a little bit more enjoyable in that aspect.
Oh, yeah. Well, easier for the positions, because anytime you're hip thrusting, especially if you're just setting up a random bench, it's always wobbly and you're trying to get your shoulders funky. Yeah, exactly. And so those machines have got to be wonderful for that. The thing that I would recommend for hip thrusts, if you're going to do them, though, is really watch where your foot position is. And so, like, if this was me, here we go. Are you guys ready for this? This is very scientific. So if this was me in a hip thrust, and this is my foot, and this is my knee, and this is the rest of my body, the farther that my foot gets away from my hips, then the more hamstring involvement I'm going to get. So we just said that the hip thrust is really good for negating the hamstring so that you can focus on the glutes. So you want at the top position to be kind of in a 90 degree at the knee. And the farther your foot gets away from it, the more hamstring involvement. And we see this from beginners all the time. They set up, they're not aware of that concept. And so they end up doing a lot of very hamstring heavy hip thrusts. And maybe that's not what you're looking for.
Right. Yeah. Another exercise I would even recommend that we've done in class a decent amount is lunges, but not just any old lunge, like trying to drive your knee over the toe. That's been a huge game changer for me, I'd say, with trying to activate my glutes, because I'm always very sore the next day. But trying to get a good lean over, like, your upper body, get a good lean forward, and then driving that knee over the toe and taking that extra bit makes a huge difference. And then powering out of that front foot still while you're trying to get that good lean, your glute will fire up very nicely.
Oh, it's just such a massive difference. And lunges is one of the things that whenever you do lunges, you're going to be extremely sore in your glutes. It's one of the only exercises that I am certain the day after or 2 days after that my glutes got hit.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually legit sore in them. And that's coming from me. I've had trouble activating them in the past. So definitely can't. If I had to do only one exercise to grow my glutes forever, it probably would be lunges. Frankly. Another thing that we do a lot of now that I never did prior to owning the gym is a lot of sumo variations. It is just such a huge difference in the glute activation that I personally feel if I do a sumo deadlift, whether that's with a barbell or with kettlebells or dumbbells or anything, versus if I do the conventional. And it doesn't mean the conventional is bad for it, but just getting out into that widened position and recruiting some of those smaller glute muscles, I think that's going to be best for, especially if you're somebody who's doing glute work for an aesthetic appearance, and you want that fully developed, you want the upper shelf and you want the bottom of the glute, a conventional deadlift is going to train more of the bottom of the glute max, and some of those sumo variations are going to hit those smaller glute med and glute min muscles a little more and really give you that pop on the top of the hip.
Yeah, I would say even too, like, if you're a beginner listening to us, something like the sumo deadlift would be great if you don't want to take up much space in the gym and you're a little nervous, like, grab a kettlebell or a dumbbell, like, then you can just go. You don't have to set up a whole barbell for it, which would be a great variation of that too. What else did you say that I was thinking of with that?
Well, how about after, because those are big overload exercises.
I was thinking about kickbacks.
Yes. No, that's perfect. So you have your overload exercises, but then there's tons of these small exercises. And one thing I want to point out before we move on from this is, if you're doing glute work and you just go into the gym and you assign yourself a bunch of like you mentioned, kickbacks and abductions and all these small glute exercises where it's kind of like a Pilates workout.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that and you are working your glutes. I just think that stuff should come after your overload work. So if you were planning a glute day in the gym, get a heavy lift, a hip thrust, a deadlift, a squat at the beginning of your workout to pre-fatigue and activate the full muscle, then dose that small stuff on the other side. But what exercises do you like for that?
I thought of right away like kickbacks, like especially if you have like a cable machine and you can put it on your ankle and then you can do kickbacks. If you do it right, like I remember the first time I saw it on Instagram and I was like, oh, I'm going to try it out at the gym. I was not kicking it right. My back was arched and I was like, yeah. I don't want to feel this in my glute. My hamstring's killing me and this is annoying. But if you get the setup right, it's crazy of how much you can. And also you don't need much weight on that exercise either to make a difference.
Yeah, I think just like when we had said that it's easy for the hamstrings or lower back to take over for the glutes.
Yeah.
Some of those smaller exercises really make you aware of the position you actually need to be in to recruit that muscle. Mm-hmm. Just like you had said, if I am doing a kickback, we're going to test out this setup, see if you can see this. But if I was doing that kickback and I'm arched through my back, I'm not going to feel it in my glute. I'm just going to be squeezing my lower back. Mm-hmm. But if I go ahead and get that rib cage down like we teach and get those hips tucked under a little bit more, all of a sudden you feel that glute fire up.
Even step downs I like too, or like if you're as you come back, rather than having your foot directly under you, if you kind of bring it back a little bit farther and nice and controlled, and like kind of breaking at the hips when you come back, that's a huge one too. Yeah. Quick contact and up, that burns up. We did that in a program not too long ago, and that was crazy of how big of a difference it was, especially if you make the box or step up, whatever you're using, a little bit higher.
Yeah, and that goes back to what you had said about if you lean forward on a lunge. Mm-hmm. So general rule of thumb, we teach this when we do lunges, we teach this when we do step ups or step downs, mm-hmm. and we teach it especially on Bulgarian split squats, is we prefer, one, it's easier to learn at first, I think, but two, we prefer, because we are trying to get people to develop their glutes, a lean forward. And so if you're more straight up and down on a Bulgarian split squat or a lunge, you're going to be a little bit more quad and hip flexor dominant. But if you lean forward and you especially try to treat it like a single leg movement, a single leg squat, and you drive through that front leg and put 80% of your weight there, then you'll finally really feel your glutes on that stuff.
For sure.
Yeah. The other thing, just quick mention, is we recently did a program where we did glutes 3 times a week. That was extremely helpful for me. Mm-hmm. We did so many different variations, and I think as I assess that I don't naturally feel my glutes all the time, just hitting them 3 times a week and keeping them, for lack of a better term, awake, mm-hmm. was extremely helpful for me. So if you're ever struggling to grow a muscle group, try hitting it with more frequency. And just imagine that it's dormant. It's Snow White, and you gotta kiss it and wake it up. That's weird. It's weird. We're talking about butts. Kiss your butt, wake it up. But yeah.
Good thing I've never seen
Snow White. Did we beat this enough?
Yeah, I think that we beat a dead horse.
Okay.
Good.
Well, how about you talk about hamstrings?
Or let's get hamstrings on to that. Next. Yeah. Okay.
We'll just go right down.
Go right down the line. Hamstrings. So I would say, even if we're, let's go back to like the whole athlete thing. Another piece where you see a lot of people with pretty strong hamstrings, I would put it as, granted, I have more of a track background, so do you, but it would be like still sprinters and even like jumpers have a lot stronger of hamstrings. Hamstring work, I think, is super awesome. I mean, it's going to fall down the same thing, a lot of glutes, right? Because it's all that posterior chain. But deadlifts have been a really awesome one. I'd say for that, that's where I've probably seen the most of my growth in hamstrings.
How do you make a deadlift more
hamstring dominant? Well, less bend in your knees.
Yeah.
Put it as. So, I mean, you don't want to be completely stiff, but definitely less bend versus a conventional where you're bending very good compared to like more of an RDL.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's all really an RDL mm-hmm. or a stiff leg deadlift is just a straighter legged version so mm-hmm. that we hit more hamstrings when we do that. Like, just like with the glutes, I think there's a big issue, hamstrings. So we, just for context for everybody, we're sitting in a gym where we don't have any machines. Mm-hmm. And I do think that's been an issue for us when it comes to hamstring training. For probably the first year and a half, everything that I would program hamstring-wise was a stretch exercise, an RDL, a deadlift, single leg RDLs. And we didn't have really any good shortened variation. So I think, once again, you can't ignore the shortened variation. Just like a bicep curl feels better if you shorten that muscle, the hamstring feels better if you get it shortened. And so that means that you have to bend the knee. Mm-hmm. Now, the way we solved that, since we have an open space and no machines in here, is we got those hamstring rollers.
Those are, yeah. Anybody that's watching this that came in here knows those hamstring rollers, and you're probably groaning just hearing it.
Yeah, they're
brutal. They're amazing, I think.
Yeah, I think, of course, those overload exercises like your RDLs and stuff for hamstrings are going to be they're going to be phenomenal for developing really good strength, especially in athletic movement where our leg tends to be a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. But if you're really going for shape, you have to teach that muscle to shorten and grow it in a shortened position.
For sure.
So if you're in a gym like ours, finding a hamstring roller or some sliders on the turf work really well.
Yeah.
Or if you're in a regular gym, hamstring curls on a machine. Mm-hmm. You should definitely be doing those if you want to train big hamstrings.
For
and
sure.
Go heavy, right?
Burner.
We did see a really cool variation that Stettler and I think his wife sent it to us, where if you don't have much equipment and you want to train hamstrings, you may have tried this, but wait, because we have a tip. If you put a band around something, whether that's the couch at home or the rig,
and a long resistant band.
Yep, nice long resistance band. And then you put that around your legs. You can do hamstring curls, but I've done that in the past, and we don't program it in the gym very often because the band slips off your feet. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they put that band through one of those glute bands.
Yeah, glute band, yeah.
Which we didn't even talk about with
booty
glutes.
Bands.
Booty bands. Yeah. And then looped that band around your feet, and it stays there. So it's just something that you guys can definitely try.
Yeah, all at home. See, you don't always have to be at a gym. You can make stuff at home if you need to.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Cool. Quads, this is your jam.
Are definitely my favorite.
Quads.
Yeah, we all want to be quad mommies and quad daddies, right? I mean, come on. Quads, I don't know. I mean, it's funny because you've heard in past podcasts, I hate squatting. But in other aspects, like my absolute favorite machine ever, like if I was going to the gym, would be a quad extension, obviously. But that is definitely one of the best exercises. I would say, though, as much as I say I don't like squatting, doing like a narrow stance squat, even like on a wolf wedge, or if like you put a plate and like it's like heel elevated, that's been a huge game changer. Yeah. If you go about hip width apart, and then if you're holding a dumbbell or a kettlebell in the goblet position, that freaking kills. But it's such a great
exercise. Why do you think it's different than like the regular squats?
I mean, definitely with being more narrow and driving your knees over the toe, I'd say even more is just more quad prominent, I guess, right?
Or deep dominant. Knee bend is the way I think of that. It's just if you can get into deep knee bend positions, you're more likely to develop the quad. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, a quad extension at the gym on a machine just feels so amazing compared to most other things. The other weird exercise that we've done that seems to fire up the quad like crazy is when we do frog pumps or frog squats. You know what I'm talking about? I'm going to show you guys on here real quick,
exactly,
just so you know,
because
there's not
about.
Really a good way, and you might not find it on Google, but if I came down here and I just raised my hips so that I was just straightening at the leg, and I think the reason that hits the quad so hard and quad extensions, like you mentioned, hit the quad so hard or knee extensions is because now you're only dealing with one joint moving at a time. And so I think that's why sometimes people can squat and not develop big quads. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't go down deep enough like we just mentioned, or maybe there's just so many different muscles at play that your glutes or your hamstrings or something else could be taking over and doing the majority of the work,
right?
And you're not getting the quad development. And it's a lot of effort to do a heavy squat if you're not gonna actually target it. So isolation stuff for quads, I think, is massive.
Yeah.
When you're in something like that knee extension machine, you ever play with like where your feet are?
Not on a quad extension, on a leg press, I guess, but not on that.
Okay, yeah. Same thing there. Like if you play with where your foot is, you're going to be able to target, since there are four different muscles on the quads, you can target the center of the quad a little bit more. You can target the outside of the quad, and you can target that teardrop, which is, I think, what most people really want from their quads is that teardrop muscle.
Yeah.
You can target that really easily on those knee extensions.
I never ever thought about that.
That's one of the reasons I think you really love the deep goblet squats too, is when you do a narrow stance squat, especially if you can actually get full range of motion and keep good positions on it, which is why we use the heel elevation. Mm-hmm. And you get into deep knee bend with a narrow stance, that's gonna effectively target that teardrop muscle on the inside of the leg and get really good development there. Of course, you know, things like lunges and everything are also going to develop your quads,
I was going to say lunges and like even those Bulgarian split squats still like that. So what we were talking about earlier of trying to like lean forward more, I guess more on a lunge, you'd want to be more upright and then be at 90 degrees with your legs versus leaning that knee over the toe. That's going to be more quad dominant.
Yeah. Just like with the glutes that we talked about, I think you need to start with an overload exercise.
Yeah.
And even if you do something that you're trying to make it quad dominant, a squat, a lunge, and you're trying to be quad dominant with it, there's still so many joints at play and so many big muscles at play that you want to think, okay, yes, I'm overloading my quads there, but maybe I'm not really targeting them effectively.
For sure.
I still have to do it to actually get the strength there, but then I should definitely do some of those isolation movements that we just talked about, knee extensions especially. And maybe even some frog squats if you feel like being the weirdo at the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah, some step-ups. Yeah, that was another thing we really liked for quads was when we did the step-ups, but it was 1 foot and it was only holding one weight.
Yes.
For some reason, that hit my quads way better than double kettlebell step-ups.
Yes, I remember that exact program, yes.
Yeah, I just feel like when it was a single, you could, oh, go ahead, what's up?
No, I just thought of Spanish squats. That was another one I totally forgot about.
Yeah.
I don't know if you don't know what those are definitely, I mean, I don't, do people do those that often?
I don't know.
I don't know.
We do them by locking our feet into the bench.
Yeah.
And then you're basically
like an elevator
back.
Coming back. Yeah. Or not an elevator, you're like a machine. Or I think of like, you're like a, at a, what am I trying to think of? Amusement park.
Okay.
It's like you think about certain like rides that go like, and like, it's like your body comes back as your knees are kind of still in front of you as you're leaning back. You just have to look it up because right now it probably doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you'll have to just look at that one. I think of it as like a robot learning to do his first sit into a chair.
That's
like,
a good, better way to think about it. Yeah.
But since the camera's on, I guess we can do this. It would essentially be like if my feet were locked in and I was able to lean back, that I sit up and then I lean back as I sit down. I can't even do it, right? Your feet have to be locked in.
Yeah.
I think the reason that works as well is because we're taking one of the joints out of the equation.
Yeah.
So now we can more effectively isolate.
Yeah, that one's definitely life-changing.
If you are trying to grow your quads, though, you may have enough quad growth. If you've been doing leg days regularly, you have any sort of athletic background, likely the development's there. Mm-hmm. But especially for women, you just keep more body fat on your quads, even at lower body fats. Like some people we see this from a certain individual in the gym. She gets abs before she gets a lot of really good quad definition.
Yeah.
So as far as body fat loss, sometimes you actually have the muscle you want and you just can't quite see the quad definition because there's too much fat on there.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
All you can do is diet and you know, hope that your body reacts.
Yeah. Calories and protein. Anyways.
Anyways. Calves. We're doing calf work right now.
Check out your calves because one might be smaller than the other. I'm just kidding. But
super common.
No, actually serious. That's something I learned as us working on more calf focused exercises. It's nice because you can go into the gym and you can do like a, I don't even know what it's called, but I know there's like in a calf assisted machine that you can
work on. Yeah, where you put it on your shoulders.
Yes. Yeah.
Or they have the seated ones too, the donkey raises.
See, I haven't seen that one, I guess. Well, yeah. You can even do it on leg presses.
I think donkey is the one where you like bend over and you do your calf raises like this.
But... Oh, weird. I've not seen that. Well, I don't know.
It's probably not a favorite of most people at the gym.
But I've even seen people do it on like leg presses. I've done it before where like I'm in between my sets on a leg press and then I just set it up to work my calves. Anyways, the moral of it is, definitely calf work is important. And I would honestly say that that's something that gets overlooked more than anything on your lower body.
Just from a general body function, we find that most people, if you've had any sort of athletic history, you probably sprained an ankle at some point, and most people don't rehabilitate that properly. So then your foot / ankle strength became compromised at some point, and it could be affecting you and you don't even know it. You want to introduce them to your buddy there?
This is Griswold.
Griswold the dog,
Griswold,
his first feature.
He's our gym mascot, podcast mascot.
Excellent calves on that guy.
Yeah.
So with when you're trying to get back that function, I'll first start with that. Like if you legitimately have a hard time doing calf raises because whether you just have been sedentary for a long time or you've had injuries, I have a problem with it on my right side right now where my right calf is way weaker and it really causes me issues with my lifting.
Mm-hmm.
The way that that has worked for me to strengthen it up and what we're doing in classes right now is a combination of calf raises and iso holds and walks, which are just kind of iso holds, but then they're a little bit more dynamic. And when I say iso holds, as simple as go into a calf raise and hold that top position.
Mm-hmm.
And watch, the next time you're watching a sporting event, or even just imagine in your head like a sick clip of somebody making a cut on a football field or on the soccer field, usually their foot is not fully in the ground. Sometimes it is, but if somebody's really sprinting and cutting, they actually have a stiff ankle and they're pushing through the ball of their foot when they're really being reactive and athletic. And so even just the ability to handle multiple body weights of force into an ankle that can stay stiff or it can go heel to ground and has all that capability is the reason that people are athletic. And if you lose that, you just don't feel as light on your feet.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good way to put it.
And so iso holds both in a straight leg and a bent knee position. I think this would be a good time to talk a little bit about calf anatomy. So when you look at your calves, you really are dealing with two muscle groups. You're dealing with like your soleus and then your gastrocnemius. And your gastroc is kind of the one that everybody thinks of as like the really showy muscles there. Mm-hmm. So that's the ones that are like the balls on the back. And you have your inside gastroc and your outside gastroc. Those are best trained in a straight knee position. And so if you are going to do calf raises, try to lock your knee out and do that if you want to develop those muscles. If you want to do your soleus, which is a little bit more responsible for athletic movement and is the more powerful of the two muscles, then you're going to want to be in bent knee. And you could have weakness in one and not the other. You know, if one gets injured, the other one's going to take over. I have like a crazy development of my lateral gastroc and my medial one's all shut down, and that's probably part of my problem. So, you know, pay attention to the fact that there are multiple muscles back there.
For sure. Even adding on with that, like I think even like how we work on tibialis, movements to try to strengthen that up. So aka you hear all the time like, oh, my shin, or I have shin splints or whatever you probably hear. That's definitely something that I'd say when I was a runner more, you know, back in my day, that was something. I had shin splints all the time and I was never talked to about strengthening your shins.
That is weird, huh? Well, the shin splints are such an issue in track.
But
we don't really do
anything.
Much to target.
They say ice it. It'll get better.
Yeah.
Wear different shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are good programs do a series of walks, and we've been doing them in class here, but toe walks, heel walks, mm-hmm. and then what we call blade walks, which is intentionally trying to walk on the outside of your foot a little bit. That can just help prep your foot. You just got to imagine that your foot is like the bottom. I wish we had one here that I could show. It's like the bottom of one of those stools at a bar that has a swivel bottom. Mm. And so it needs to be able to adapt. That's what your ankle should be able to do, is adapt to any different position, no matter where your leg's at, and get you to stability on the ground. So if you have poor mobility, you don't have that ability. And then something else is going to have to move instead of the ankle.
Poor mobility, no ability.
No ability, exactly.
That's how you, well, you said that.
Thanks. I guess the last thing I mentioned on calves, yes, you can get a lot of work done by doing a lot of high rep calf raises. And I think a lot of people just don't do enough calf work generally.
Yeah.
But don't be scared to load. As soon as you can do 10, 15 reps of regular calf raises, you should find a way to load them. Because what we know about muscle growth is that our type 2 muscle fibers are the one that have the biggest potential for growth. And those are our power fibers, which means that you have to get them under load to activate them appropriately. And so if you're really strong with your calves and you're just repping out 25 reps of calf raises, you might get tired eventually, but I think it's very likely that you don't see the growth. Mm-hmm. We don't see cross-country runners running around with massive calves. They might have well-defined calves, mm-hmm. but they don't have massive calves.
Right.
And so the
no
people
DK with, Metcalf
but,
calves.
Yeah, Met calves.
Met calves.
But who, I mean, if you had to think about somebody, I know somebody you know actually that has massive calves, but the type of person who has massive calves is who? Is what type of person?
I mean, a very strong individual. I don't know, lifter.
Yeah. I think of throwers in track. Yeah. Usually have these massive calves. They have to have excellent ankle mobility and they have to be really strong and forceful.
Yeah.
And the same thing, linemen, right? Linemen in football have massive calves. And a strength coach that we know has massive calves.
Big as my head.
Yeah. And so if you really want size and you're trying to get that definition, go heavy.
Mm-hmm. Go heavy or go home.
What else? What am I missing? You're just in dog mode now.
No.
No.
We're vibing.
You're vibing.
Is that all of them?
That's all the lower body.
Don't be afraid to go heavier on lower body. Said it once, I'll say it again. Yeah.
And if your goal really is muscle mass, then eventually at some point you're going to have to eat. Mm-hmm. And so it's really difficult to optimize for maximum muscle growth and be dieting all the time mm-hmm. at the same time. We like to see those as two different processes.
For sure. And like you see a lot, like, well, I personally see on TikTok and Instagram, for example, that people are always like, oh, you want bigger glutes, you want bigger quads, whatever. Everything we just talked about, you do need to eat more in order to get those spots to grow. If you want to be bigger, you got to eat more. You can't eat less and then hope that that's going to grow.
Yeah. And you just mentioned, it just triggered me when you said watching people on Instagram. I think it's very popular with trainers generally and people on Instagram to pick an exercise where you're going to feel a burn in the target muscle. And yes, a burn is good in the target muscle. But just remember, if all you're doing for your quads are, like if I just sat here and did leg lifts like this, eventually my quads would burn. Mm-hmm. But I'm never going to grow massive quads doing that. Otherwise, mm-hmm. there'd be massive quads all over the nursing home because that's all they do. But you really have to get some heavy weights on. So there are definitely people out there who have massive glutes, quads, hamstrings, and calves that never necessarily get a targeted burn in those muscles, but because they lift so heavy, they have grown.
Yeah, for sure. And even people, I heard this from a podcast, shout out Deanna if you're listening, but she talked about in her podcast, where you will see individuals like this that you're talking about that will show these little exercises, even like Pilates. No hate on Pilates. Pilates is a great workout. But if you're looking for growth in your lower body, especially of what we're talking about, Pilates isn't going to give you that. So it's a lot of these people you see that's like, well, they look like that and they do Pilates. Well, sure, but they've had a lot of background with lifting already in the past that they haven't maybe showed you. But ironically, now they're doing Pilates and now they're just working on little muscle groups. So the Pilates did not give them those huge muscles that you were seeing.
100%. And genetic potential has a massive play into this. And this, especially with glutes, we probably should have talked about that during the glute thing. There is an amazing book out there by Brett Contreras called The Glute, I can't remember what the book is, Glute Lab or something like that.
Yeah.
Because he runs a company called Glute Lab and he's probably the utmost researcher on glutes and how to grow them. And what he shows in there is the several different hip morphologies that are just natural, like you're just born with different hip morphologies, they give different shapes to your glutes. So if you look at your glutes and they're a different shape than your favorite Instagram influencer, yes, you can grow your glutes and they may get bigger in the shape that they currently are, but they likely aren't going to look like that influencers. Mm-hmm. There are some people that legitimately just have their tailbone naturally sits up higher and so their butt looks bigger. And so that person that just has looked like they had a big butt since they were 12 can go to Pilates and then all of a sudden you think Pilates is going to grow your butt when it's actually going to be getting in and pushing some heavy weights.
For sure. Even something like that too is like I'm someone that has like hip dips. So like you look at the front of me and I just look like a brick shit house as we've talked about now. But like there's no roundness to the sides of my hips, right? So like I'm never going to be able to grow glutes to where you can see them from the front of me like some influencers you might see. So you always have to remember that like your body is going to be way different than everyone else's. Like whatever your dream body is of glutes, for example, is not going to look like anyone else's. And that's okay. Like you're going to look how you're supposed to look.
Yeah. If you give yourself enough time, you're probably going to be pretty excited about how you look. Just be better than you were yesterday. Don't worry about what other people are doing because Instagram's got a bunch of filters in Photoshop anyways.
Yeah, and half of them get the work done anyways. They're not actually doing the work. They're getting the work.
And I don't know if this has happened to you, and we'll cut this off soon, but have you ever met somebody from Instagram that's like a body person in person, and then you're like, oh, you don't actually look like that?
No. I haven't, but I've seen people on Instagram say that, you know, like they will literally say, and it is like shocking.
You don't want to meet your idols.
Yeah.
Well, especially because I said it like 6'4". And so everybody on the internet looks taller than they are. And so sometimes you meet people and you're like, oh, you're actually just a much smaller human than I thought you were.
Yes.
Or somebody who maybe is a booty model. I remember this happened to me when I went to the Olympia one time. This girl who was like known for her glutes and I had followed her for a while. I met her there and like took a picture with her. And I remember, of course, you're going to look. Oh, those are not as big as they look on the internet.
Yeah.
Like there's definitely something to angles and filters.
Yes.
So or you just worry about yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And like it's really hard, like the comparing thing. Like I'm sure men do it a lot. I know me as a girl, I do it all the time. But for me, so I'm 5'7" for reference. I will look at all these girls. I'm like, gosh, how do they look like that? But they're like 5 feet or 5'2". Well, they're going to look very different than I do. They're a lot more compacted than I am. There's more to me than there is them. So always remember too that a lot of these people you're seeing are probably a lot smaller than you are or whatever it might be.
And if you are a little taller and lankier, here's the way I've thought about it because I'm skinny and I'm 6'4". I just figure if I eventually build like massive arms and massive legs, it's just going to be that much more impressive.
Oh, yeah.
So then you can't take that away from me.
Mm-mm, 110%. So.
Cool. But Matresa, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram at MatresaFit, MatresaFit. Even if you want to find me on TikTok, I haven't talked about my TikTok. It's Sneakerhead Matt. I don't know how to spell that out. I spelt it out weird, actually, so you'll figure it out.
Yeah. I am at Nick, N-I-C-K, _Byom, B-Y-O-M, on Instagram. You can also follow all of our Strength Academy stuff at Strength Academy RF. On Instagram, and then we're pretty much at Strength Academy 101 everywhere else. One thing I will mention, I'm not sure if this is gonna go up in time, but you should look out for it for the future. We are now taking our body composition program online. This is something that Matresa has been running and we've been developing for the last 2 years and has just gotten people amazing results as far as stacking on muscle mass and shredding fat off their bodies. It's an 8-week program where you work directly with both Matresa and I. And we are your coaches, and we're really intensive about checking in on you. It's an accountability program that gets you the results that you always wanted, but you just couldn't put the habits together to do it. So
110%. And guys, I mean, at the end of the day, push yourself harder than you did yesterday. And two, if you want to grow your lower body, listen to Nick and I.
Yeah. Thanks for stopping by Strength 101.
Peace out.